Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skyla Jeremias. With the U.S.'s market experience with biosimilars approaching a decade, industry experts are beginning to look into ways to accelerate biosimilar development and make lower-cost products available to patients quicker. Strict regulatory guidelines require manufacturers to conduct numerous, expensive, and time-consuming preclinical and clinical trials to obtain approval and prove that biosimilars are safe and effective. However, research has shown that not all of these tests may be necessary anymore, and there may be ways to cut down on development spend without compromising safety. A commentary paper written by four representatives from pharmaceutical companies sought to provide an unbiased perspective on how this objective can be achieved, noting that extensive testing may have been needed when biosimilars were new, but approval requirements should be updated as the industry gains new information. Today, I'm joined by Julie Reed, Executive Director of the Biosimilars Forum, a nonprofit organization aimed at the advancement of biosimilar adoption through collaboration with biosimilar manufacturers. The companies that the authors represent, Samsung Bioepis, Sandoz, Boehringer Ingelheim, and Fresenius Kabi, are all members of the forum, and our discussion with Reed will highlight some of the major pieces from the paper and next steps for the industry to propel biosimilar development into the future. Welcome, Julie. To start us off, this article presents the developer's perspective of how to streamline biosimilar development. However, oftentimes developer viewpoints are seen as just a way to maximize profits. Why are these voices important for other stakeholders to pay attention to?
Thanks, Skylar. And as always, really appreciate not just talking with you, but seeing with you and the opportunity. So thank you again for having me. Listen, I think what's so important about this paper, and I want to recognize the authors, especially Hillel Cohen and Dorothy McCabe, Dr. McCabe, Dr. Cohen, Dr. Ouellette, Dr. Romanot. These are scientists, and these, as members of the Biosimilars Forum, these scientists are experts in biosimilar development. So this is, the paper reflects the science and the experience of our members. And our members have over 15 years of experience in biosimilar development. They have launched multiple biosimilars in over 80 countries. And they know from the very beginning what are the scientific parameters of biosimilar development. And the paper doesn't reflect in any way an attempt to maximize profits. We made a social commitment to bring lower cost biosimilars to this country in the US and other countries. And the paper reflects the evolution. It reflects the experience, the learnings, the new technologies that our members are using, and it reflects how the science has evolved and how biosimilar development needs to evolve after 15 years. So I think that's what's most important. I think that streamlining, what we're trying to say is evolving and keeping up with and recognizing the new science for biosimilar development will streamline biosimilar development. It will eliminate the unneeded and unethical redundancies and will allow our members to bring even more biosimilars to the U.S. and to patients who need them. So it has nothing to do with profits. It has everything to do with scientific methods, evolving, ensuring the highest quality and safety of the biosimilars, but it has everything to do with lowering costs for patients.
How can streamlining development of biosimilars improve the entire pharmaceutical and healthcare industries, and why should this be top of mind for stakeholders?
That's a fantastic question, and I think that's a really important question, especially as the U.S. faces drug pricing negotiation. Biosimilars around the world are very innovative. It's a new industry. It's a new science to bring a biosimilar to development and to very high standards of regulatory approval, especially at the FDA. And what streamlining development can do is it allows for increased cost savings and competition. And what we see around the world, and especially in Europe, and the US needs to catch up a bit, is that by having greater cost savings, countries and payers are able to afford new innovations. The savings from biosimilars helps to pay for the new innovations, the new medicines, the new therapies that patients also need to have access to. So that's really key that, again, we see in IQVIA's report this year shows that there are 50% of the current biologics that are approved on market will have no biosimilar competition. That is another reason why our members and our scientists feel it's important that we need to streamline the development and involve the development of biosimilars in order that patients will have access to biosimilars for that 50% that currently will have no competition. It's an extremely lengthy and expensive development program, 9 years. That's a very lengthy commitment for biosimilars, close to $300 million. And we believe by, again, evolving the development, recognizing the current science, we could lower that 9 years and lower that cost without compromising any clinical safety.
Now, as you mentioned, the report noted an IQVIA report that found that about half of biologic drugs coming off patent in the next decade may have no biosimilar competitors. Why are companies choosing not to compete in these markets, and what can be done to encourage their involvement?
So that is a very important report and observation. And going back to what I said earlier is when you take a look, there's so many decisions that a company has to make when they choose to develop and get approval of a biosimilar and launch it. One of the decisions is as you look forward, you're evaluating the length of time and the cost of development and the cost of all the patent litigations and that amount of time compared to when you launch, what will the market look like? And you have to make wise development decisions, wise financial investment decisions. And if the market is such that you could launch into it and not have a return on your development and patent investments, you have to take a look at that from a business perspective and see whether or not it is wise to develop that biosimilar. And I think that's what the companies are facing, is that it's cost prohibitive to develop a biosimilar for a market that may not have a return on the development investment. That's why, again, we feel, now's the time to evolve the science and the science, or to recognize the evolution of the science, and streamline some of the unnecessary areas of redundancy that we don't clinically need or scientifically need for biosimilar development. And that will allow us to develop more biosimilars that may not have any competition. The paper outlines some really good recommendations, and I'll kind of walk through them. The first one is to eliminate a routine requirement for comparative clinical efficacy trials. And I think what this does, and I'm sure you're aware that the FDA is having the workshop on streamlined development with all the international regulatory bodies, and you can register for that workshop. It's public for the first 2 days in September, and you can register at the FDA website for that. But one of the key things by eliminating that requirement, it would enable biosimilars development going back to the question you just asked me, is to, again, have a wider range of development for products, for biologics that may not see biosimilar development. And what we know from our scientific experience over the last 15 years and from a global perspective is that not the pharmacokinetics and PKDs and the pharma, and I'm going to let Hillel give you all the technical stuff because I wish he was here, my scientist brother. But, you know, again, comparative clinical efficacy studies are not routinely necessary for all biosimilars. And we feel strongly that the current science and the analytics reflect that. And we believe the FDA would agree with us and other regulators as well. So that's one of the key things. One of the other pieces is to utilize a risk-based approach to immunogenicity testing. And that allows us to do it when it's needed. Okay, we would never not do it if it's needed. But again, to take a look at it and whether or not it needs to be done routinely. And that by using a risk-based approach, you're approaching each biosimilar as unique, evaluating its immunogenicity risk with the regulator and the scientists and deciding whether or not you actually have to do that. One of the key things, and I do strongly believe the FDA will agree with us on that, is we need to modify the U.S. standard for interchangeability. We have 15 years of experience on market with biosimilars here in the U.S. and around the world. And when the BPCIA was originally written, we had the interchangeability standard was put in because the science and the experience was not there that we have today. And there was a concern for potential immunogenicity. Now, we have 15 years, actually more than that if you look around the world, but we have 15 years and over 2 billion patient days of data that shows there has been no adverse events or immunogenicity with a biosimilar. We don't need the interchangeables rating in the U.S. any longer, and we need to modify it, and we need to consider eliminating it. And that reflects science. That reflects experience in science and data. And I think that's what's most important. Again, this is a scientific approach to streamlining to interchangeability. Science evolves, experience evolves, biosimilar development is ready to evolve. The other piece is the requirement, you know, for medicine is global. Okay. And you know, we all travel around the world. And if we ran out of one of our medicines, we would want to be able to get it if you were, you know, touring London or something. And one of the key things is that when you're doing a biosimilar development, one of the things that has been happening is it's very difficult to get the reference product. And what you're doing when you're developing a biosimilar is you're comparing your biosimilar to the innovator's reference. That's the whole piece of the comparative analytics and everything else. You're making sure your biosimilar functions the same as the innovator. Sourcing that reference is very difficult. And one of the things we've had to do is to do studies to prove if we bought the innovator in a different country or sourced it from a different country, does it match the U.S.? And we'd like to have that conversation scientifically, whether or not those bridging exercises are really necessary, and to take a look at that. So that's one of the key things. And then the other piece, and we're excited again about the FDA hosting this international regulators group in September, is regulatory consistency from a global perspective. This is so important, is that we want the highest standards, no compromises on safety or clinical efficacy when we look at streamlining, but also to have the global regulatory consistency. That will help developers if we know that Europe and the U.S. are maintaining the highest standards in Canada, in Japan, and everyone else has the same regulatory consistency, we can eliminate redundancy in our applications. Again, that'll increase access to more biosimilars around the world. So those are the key pieces that we feel those five things are the five, you know, sort of benchmarks that we believe that can happen. And the science, again, like I keep repeating myself, the science and the experience.
The report also noted that federal approval requirements for clinical efficacy and immunogenicity were reflective of the time in which they were created. But things have changed, and the requirements may need an update. What new information supports altering requirements for these data?
Absolutely. Great, Skylar. I think it goes back to the 15 years of experience, global experience. As I said earlier, the scientist who wrote this paper looked at, and it's an amazing paper in my mind because it has close to 80 references. That tells you people have been writing about this. People have been scientifically evaluating all of this. 15 years of experience, multiple biosimilars launched in over 80 countries. That clearly is a reflection of the science. And the developers are not the only ones. Don't forget, you know, the scientific community, all the researchers, the FDA, the European Medicines Agency, Health Canada. There is a global level of incredible global level of experience with the science and technology of biosimilars.
The authors noted that the U.S. needs a better system for pharmacovigilance for biosimilars. What needs to be done to ensure adequate pharmacovigilance for biosimilars and innovator products alike?
Sure. I think what we're asking for, and one of the key things is the FDA here in the U.S. has, just like we do, and I mentioned earlier, the multiple years of experience with biosimilars and real-world data. The FDA's sentinel events and the drug reporting system on anything that everyone has to, you know, follow has data in it. And what we would love to see is the FDA publish the data that we know exists, is that there's not any adverse events or any immunogenicity issues with biosimilars. We also feel that the global regulatory agencies together can start to publish that data and that experience as well. And I think that's what we're looking for. And we're looking for, again, that sort of global regulatory consistency as well. So those are the key things. It's not as much about the system, but as much as the reporting. And that, well, no, reporting that data and using it to educate physicians and patients about the safety of biosimilars is also very, very key, because we continue to have a lot of confusion every time. And I think this is, you know, part of what our responsibilities are as an industry. As you know, whenever there's a new biosimilar launched in a new therapeutic area, say ophthalmology is one of our more recent ones, we educate the patients and the physicians. But if we had the agency's data on the safety of biosimilars in the public domain, that would help even more to give you know, confidence to the patients and the doctors. So that's one of our
As you brought
key
up,
things.
Multiple switch studies for interchangeability were mentioned in the paper as another expendable, time-consuming, and expensive step for companies looking to expand accessibility of their pharmacy benefit biosimilars. What needs to be done to quell concerns about transitioning to biosimilars without having to conduct these studies?
I think, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, let's talk about the real world evidence and the data about the safety and get that out there and give talk about, because we're confident. We believe the agency is confident, the science and everything else, biosimilars are safe. I think as I mentioned about evolving interchangeability, is when the law was first written, there was no experience with biosimilar launches and development at the agency or in the U.S. domain. We now have that. Patients are being switched or transitioned to biosimilars all the time based on whatever their doctor prescribes, as well as whatever their insurance will cover. And again, we have the data, needs to be published, needs to be talked about the safety. But experience shows that these switching patients are being switched, or we prefer the word transitioned, because you're not being really switched to a different medicine. You're just getting a biosimilar version of your reference. So the science, you know, shows us that we don't need to continue to do these studies before a product can be determined as interchangeable. And we feel that too will help reduce the confusion, because interchangeability is not a higher clinical standard. It doesn't mean the biosimilar is, the interchangeable biosimilars is safer or more efficacious. All biosimilars have the same safety and efficacy as any interchangeable biosimilar as well. So the confusion is high with that term and does not reflect today's
What is the most important thing stakeholders and healthcare professionals should take away from this commentary piece, and what are some next steps to adequately streamline biosimilar development?
Thanks, Skylar. I think one of the most important things that consumers and the audience need to understand is that biosimilars are safe. And they are, again, we have 15 years of experience, 2 billion patient days of safety data. We've launched in 80 countries, and biosimilars are having an impact. They're increasing patient access to these medicines, and they're lowering cost. With anything, biosimilars, again, need to evolve. The innovations, the development of biosimilars, the technologies, the science behind biosimilar development has evolved. And the approval dynamics need to evolve as well to reflect the new science. At no time would anyone, a member of the forum, our scientists, our physicians who represent our member companies, and the FDA and the regulatory agencies, we look at things scientifically. We look at things with patient safety at the forefront. And at no time would anything ever be compromised in the development of a biosimilar in any of those areas. But we would love to bring more biosimilars to the U.S. And by recognizing our experience in science, in evolving the development, we will be able to do that.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
I just hope, I'm looking forward to the September workshop with the international regulatory agencies. And I want to thank the FDA for hosting that. But my conclusion is really how proud I am of the scientists and of the member companies of the forum. I want to recognize Hillel Cohen, my brother from another mother, and Jillian Ouellette, and Dottie McCabe, and Fabrice Romanat, and Matt Turner, and the entire group of scientists who spent and wrote this paper. I take no credit for the paper, but I'm just so proud of them for leading a global discussion, a scientific global discussion. They're pioneers in the industry, and they're experts in the science. So I just want to thank them and recognize them.
Thank you, Julie, for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.